Welcome to The Good Stuff with Sonoma County Wine Growers. I'm Virginie Boone alongside Carissa Cruz, President CEO of The Wine Growers, here to talk about what makes Sonoma County such a special place to grow, make, and enjoy wine. And hey, happy summer.
Happy summer. June.
I know. Woo-hoo-hoo. Summer solstice. The whole deal.
Well, and just, we should announce we are pre-recording this because I am currently on a plane flying back from Aspen for the Aspen Food and Wine Festival. So as much as I like to be in two places at once.
I don't know that you need to be quite so specific about your whereabouts, but
I know,
that's fine.
Right?
I mean, what the heck? You're on a plane.
I hope I'm on a plane. Yeah.
And not that's, sitting in a terminal waiting for the plane.
Not sitting at the airport. But yeah, we were super excited. You know, we've had a long wonderful relationship with Food and Wine magazine and the editor there, Hunter Lewis, the publisher, Tom Baer, Ray Isle, who obviously writes for them. And so we love activating at Aspen. Aspen was obviously the inspiration for our very own Healdsburg wine and food experience. And so we're really honored. Not only do we have a table at the Grand Tasting, but we were the top of the mountain wine partner. I know.
And so top of the mountain, what does that mean? That's like the event to attend?
Yeah. Do you not know?
I don't know. I'm not an insider.
No. So the Friday night of the festival, the publisher host of what they call the publisher's party, it's up at the top of the mountain. You take the gondola up thousands of feet up to the literally top of the mountain where then they literally it's really kind of trade the chefs, the wineries, some of their like high-end consumers and all of kind of the friends of food and wine are up there, and Sonoma County is the wine being poured, the only wine being poured. So we're the top of the mountain sponsor, and there's a whole sort of Western theme this year, which I guess kind of fit what we're doing. So
yeah.
So that was fun. So
okay.
It is fun.
Okay.
Or it is, it, you know, it's in motion of being fun. How about that?
How did it ever start in Aspen? It's such a kind of a random place in a way.
I don't know.
I mean,
that's a great question.
A beautiful place and kind of central, but
I mean, it's 42, it's going on its 42nd anniversary this year.
Yeah.
For that
so it's
festival.
Just like bizarre.
Yeah. I mean, it was really fun when we met, you know, at the Healdsburg event. Food and Wine magazine, they sent, and Dot Dash Meredith, their parent company, sent, I think, about 12 or 13 representatives from Food and Wine. They've obviously been our partner with the Healdsburg event from the beginning, but I think looking to get even more involved, and it was really fun. I was talking to them about how they said Aspen's sort of Aspen, right? Like, it's people go there because it's Aspen. They're in the mountains. They're, like, they like to shop, the nice hotels. Like, they're, it's kind of this, again, 42 years of that experience. Food and Wine invested in Charleston, which is kind of the other event that they're really an owner of for Food and Wine, because it was working with the Tourism Bureau there, just all about being in the town and really focused on food. So they're really, really sort of focused on food. They love the Healdsburg event because it's really focused on wine and farming. So this is the one they said, like, kind of if you look at how you differentiate all of them, being in a wine region with this global wine and food event, having farmers there, being immersed in vineyards, being able to do pop-up events around the county and dinners and lunches at different wine estates, at different ranches. It's pretty special. So,
yeah.
Yeah. So that was really great. Yeah. So I think,
okay.
There you go. That's what I know about Aspen. 42 years and running. Yay.
Yeah. And I mean, Sonoma County Wine Growers has been a part of it for as long as I've known you, right?
Yeah. So I think the first year I went was 2013. So 12 plus years. I think we took one. There's obviously during COVID, we did not go. And I think there was one other year we took off. But we've really tried to find kind of a place where, I mean, it's different consumers, right? You're going to attract different consumers to Healdsburg event or just to some of our events here than you will Aspen, which is more centrally located in the country. So I think it's a nice balance for us to, and we're also a part of Charleston. We're going to be their big event, kind of like the publisher's party is the tailgate. So they do a big tailgate party, also really appropriate for Sonoma County wines to be part of a tailgate. So we have our Healdsburg event that we're, you know, co-founders of, really involved in, and then Aspen we activate at, and then we'll activate at Charleston too. So kind of across the country, we do these global events.
And different types of wines, I suppose.
Yeah, we bring different partners every time and, you know, spread the love and also kind of mix it up, and different partners that are distributed in different locations too. So it's all great.
It is all great. What's also great is there's a very great new podcast that I think took inspiration from ours.
I know. I've heard about that Sonoma County Vintners is doing.
No, I was thinking of Good Hang with Amy Poehler.
Oh, wait, that's a way more interesting podcast.
Good Hang.
Is that your Good Hang?
It's really called Good Hang, and she has all these different guests, and it's super fun, and it's doing extremely well. So,
oh my gosh, we should have her on our show to talk about her new show.
I think we should.
Maybe she'd invite us back.
Let's reach out.
Let's DM her.
Okay. We'll do that in the break. We'll do that on the break,
and
we'll be right back on the good stuff. Back on the good stuff, and in studio today we have guests Rick and Bridget Hutchinson, owners, winemakers, presidents, all sorts of roles,
all the titles
at Amphora Winery. Welcome, thanks for joining us.
It's great to be here. Thank you.
All right. Well, I mean, let's start at the beginning. I know, Rick, you're from Sonoma County. Bridget, are you also from Sonoma County?
No, I was raised in the San Joaquin Valley.
Oh, okay. So yeah. another farming area.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So tell us each, one at a time about your backgrounds. I mean, where did you grow up in agriculture? Did you grow up around wine? Like, how'd you get here?
First of all, I just finished my 50th harvest.
Okay.
50?
That's a lot.
50.
And 28 on my own with
Amazing.
Amphora. So I started on the bottling line at Sebastiani 50 years ago, packing boxes, sweeping the floor.
Wow.
That was in the springtime.
Was that like an internship or were you hired on?
Actually, I needed a job.
Okay.
And I thought, well, $3.50 an hour sounds pretty good to me.
Seriously.
Yeah.
So, and, looking at all this wine, it kind of looked cool. So I walked into the harvest, and I'm number 8 out of 9 kids. I was born in Sebastopol.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like walking into my mom's kitchen. I just took to it like a duck to water. It was just something for me. So I learned a bit there. I moved to Mondavi and Buena Vista, some large wineries.
Yeah.
Moved up north here in Sonoma County and mentored with some really great guys at a winery called Balvern.
For sure.
Very long time ago.
Yeah.
John Kongsgaard, Doug Knoll.
Yeah.
And I was there with, Mike Duffy for a little while, and Doug moved over to Kivera.
Yes.
So I followed him. To Kivera, and I was there for over 12 years, and Doug was really the guy that really encouraged me to say, yeah, you could do this, you can go on.
So your family had nothing to do with wine, it sounds like, but maybe...
They're in the business of the tail that wags the dog. They just fill their glass up really tall.
Nice. We need that.
Yes.
We need a lot of that.
Definitely.
Yeah. So there was wine in your household, and you sort of, growing up in Sonoma.
My parents were pretty bohemian, and they, my dad would harvest from the ocean and had a garden and, like that. So look at Sonoma County. It's so abundant with everything that you could possibly imagine.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We're pretty blessed to be able to live where we live, right?
We're legit farm to table, right?
Yeah.
Absolutely. We really do live that.
Yeah, we really do. So, Bridget, San Joaquin might have been a little bit of a different scene growing up. So,
and my brothers and I often joke about, had the land been good for Zinfandel, we'd all be living much differently than had it been good for cotton or tomatoes, or those were the big row crops that we grew up with.
Mm-hmm.
Sugar beets.
Oh, wow.
Yeah,
that's right. I always forget, because Spreckles down in that stretch, I always thought, isn't that weird? Sugar cane, that doesn't grow in California. It's and they were a sugar beet business.
Mm-hmm.
So when did you end up coming to Sonoma County?
Well, part-time, I came up maybe 22 years ago, but I was a teacher in San Francisco I lived in San Francisco almost 40 years, and I taught in the Tenderloin for most of my teaching career.
Mm-hmm.
And I met Rick through, my parents hosted a foreign exchange student in the early 1980s from Australia who became a winemaker. And much later, Rick did a harvest with him. And there was this boozy trip where my brother and he and some other people went to hang out with Rick in the afternoon. And my brother calls me and he says, I think I bought a case of wine at this winery. Can you go pick it up for me? And so I get there, and Rick says, yeah, but he didn't pay for it.
Oh, no. he just thinks he bought a case of wine.
Yeah. The most expensive thing I had ever bought besides a coffee table. And
oh, my
gosh.
And
so this is where I met Rick.
Okay.
And he says, I say to him, as everybody did in those days, wow, it's so beautiful. You're so lucky to live here. And he says, yeah, but it's hard to meet women.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
That's why I just threw the gauntlet down right away.
That was my best line.
So, Rick, did you say this to most of the women?
I think so.
I can't give away all my secrets.
Okay. So at this point, this was at Amphora by then.
Yep.
Okay. So you had started your own winery.
You're 1997 was my first vintage.
Right. Okay. And so, interesting.
We'll talk about that. Go from Kivera to starting your own winery.
Yeah.
Sort of, how does that transpire?
Well, I have a big birthday coming. And back then, when I was 40, or 39 and 40, I was looking at, okay, I'm an assistant winemaker. I could probably be a winemaker for another boutique winery. And, you know, by the time I'm probably 60 or 65, they're going to put me out to pasture. And I thought, you know what, I really love this, and I love what I'm doing, and I could do my own thing and control what I wanted to do. And so I got a little bit of help and saved a little bit of money, and I started Amphora basically with the price of a luxury car. Mm-hmm. And not a Paris Hilton luxury car, but a used Lexus. And that got me 218 cases. So mostly Petite Syrah, which I was absolutely fascinated with. And to this day, we always, every year we make Petite Syrah. It's a sort of a foundation for the winery. Mm. And a little bit of Zin and a little bit of Syrah. And so we moved, we had a really great neighbor, Rich Mounts, Rich and Diane mm-hmm. Mounts, and they had this old prune barn. Mm-hmm. And I said, do you think we could kind of convert this old prune barn into a little winery? And they were so gracious enough to say, yep, but you got to do a lot of digging and a lot of nailing. So we put it together, and we moved over and was expanding, and I wanted to do more varieties. We were just doing the three varieties, and I wanted to do some Bordeaux stuff and really get into Italian and the Southern Rhone mm-hmm. varietals. So we moved over to Timbercrest Farms,
mm-hmm. yeah.
and it was a great opportunity. I noticed that in 2003, Ruth and Ronald Waltonspiel, great salt of the earth farmers, great people. They had closed their operation, and all of these buildings were sitting there just doing nothing. And what a great opportunity for our neighbors, our Papa Pietro, mm-hmm. Fred Peterson, which I've known him for 40 years, and former apprentice Eric Miller Kokomo.
Oh, yeah.
He worked with me in 2004. And then a couple of other people branched off from me as well. So I kind of paid that forward a little bit, the mentoring, Gio Martorana Winery.
Mm-hmm. Oh, wow.
So, some really good people. So it was a great opportunity for me to really expand and become a little bit out of the garage-ish thing and mm-hmm. into the mainstream. And interestingly enough, I'm back at the garage-ish. We're mostly direct-to-consumer now. Bridget runs the front of the house. I run the back of the house. And I can do, at this point in my career, I love to experiment. So we're fermenting and aging wines in terracotta. I did bring some samples if you are interested in mm-hmm. trying some. So
the answer is always yes to that, just for
the
record.
Yeah, in case you're a regular listener, you know the answer is always yes.
So
yeah.
It's really cool to be able to work with terracotta. It's always been my fantasy. I'm also a potter, and to make a pieces big enough to ferment and age in, but no ability to fire them and to really really work it. Mm-hmm. So we have imported them from Italy. Mm-hmm. So in a couple of different parts of Italy. So for me, wine is alive. And the whole process of winemaking is the control of oxidation. And the terracotta gives the wine, number one, temperature control for during fermentation. And since they have porosities just like barrels, they can give the wine a little bit of minerality and a little bit different character. Instead of oaking a wine and that becomes part of the flavor of the wine, we have a little different character. You get to actually be varietal specific.
Mm-hmm. We'll talk about that just besides being a potter. Is that what you call it? Okay. I'm like, did I get that right?
You
potter?
Did.
All right. I mean, how did you even think about or get the inspiration for sort of going down that route? Because that's very atypical.
And you clearly had that inspiration before you started your own winery because you named it Amphora.
Right.
Correct.
So yeah. So let's connect all the dots for us.
Okay. So I wanted to take a pottery class, and I joined a pottery class through the Santa Rosa Junior College. Mm-hmm. I think it's Joel Peterson, and he was a great instructor. And I started doing. It was at the same time that Amphora was coming about, and like my sessions were dinner plates, big pieces. It took an 8-foot table when I did my thing.
We still have all of them.
Wow.
Well, yeah, they're his projects. Come on.
Well, there's a lot of Amphora that I made that I had sold to help, fund trips and stuff. And I was in class, and we had to do a burnished pit-fired piece that had to be 2 feet and ready to get into the pit. And I'm looking through books and saw chapters of amphorae. Mm-hmm. And the word amphorae in Greek is the vine bearer or the carrier of the wine. And I thought, wow, that is a really cool name for a winery. And I know that you cannot trademark a surname. So I thought, okay, let's take a look at this. Got a hold of a friend of mine, an attorney, and he says no one trademarked that word, and that was almost 30 years
ago. Which is kind of shocking.
Yeah.
Which is pretty shocking.
May have tried since.
Yeah,
I imagine. Yeah.
But we're solid on that one. That's a whole other story.
Oh, jeez.
So I thought this is perfect, and I have never looked back on the name.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, talk a little bit about that sort of history of the using amphorae. I mean, you mentioned it's a Greek word, but you get some of the vessels from Italy. Like, where did that really originate, or where is it still happening?
Well, really great. It is still happening in Italy, Croatia. Mm-hmm.
Georgia
is another big place. But, it was out of necessity to have a vessel to be able to, the Romans created concrete, right? And who knows, they may have tried to make wine in concrete. It's like barrels have only been around for just a couple hundred years.
Yeah.
And that was because Napoleon had to had to plant trees to have bigger ships. And then they devised, this particular quercus can grow up and it's straight and we can make barrels out of it. So it was out of necessity, I think. And then they realized, this is really great. It's kind of like our glassware of today. Of course, stainless steel wasn't available
an option,
at all, nor food grade plastic tea bins. So I think it worked very well in history for a long time.
Yeah.
And I think it just has a real place in winemaking. It does impart a little bit of flavor in the wine. With some of the light skin varieties, we do a Nebbiolo. Mm-hmm. And, the tannins can be very powerful, but the color of the wine, there's, you can extract those tannins. But there is a microbial thing that happens that the wine is more stable in terracotta.
Mm. Interesting. Yeah, I mean, there's so many different choices now, but but to look back to kind of the lineage of it all, I mean, most things in our wine history trace back to Europe in some form or another. So, but then there's new applications. So now you must be one of the go-to guys for anybody that wants to try Amphora. Do they come and see you? Do they ask questions?
There's a few people now, especially in Paso Robles. There's a few guys doing that now. There's a gentleman in Oregon, and his name slips my mind, but he was a pottery teacher. He had made his own amphorae, and he's fermenting and aging in terracotta up there in Oregon. So Pinot Noir, actually. So there's a group of people that want to get together and and do
more.
I
think you might have a secret society going on that you're not letting
us
into.
Okay. Well, there's a lot of wineries that will definitely be like, okay, and here in the very dark corner, we have our amphora, and they'll have like one, you know, and I guess it is just a way to experiment, but I think it's on the increase.
Big financial investment.
Okay.
And so that limits you to how many you can have.
Yeah,
and
we
tell people, we have eight, so if you made 10 times as much wine as we did and you wanted the same effect, you'd need 8 times 10, you know. So it's a commitment financially.
Sure. We're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we'll talk more with Amphora Winery. Guests today on The Good Stuff are Bridget and Rick Hutchinson of Amphora Winery. And so we were talking a lot about the amphora itself. And Bridget, you happened to mention that in the beginning, like when you first came around, Rick was trying to do different amphora and for different varieties. And that was not necessarily a long-term vision.
Well, he made every piece, every different varietal had a different piece that he had made. And then when we moved to Timbercrest and he expanded and we went from 5 varietals to 17, then it was
17.
It was
crazy.
The wine club manager feels the same way, but it was impossible to keep up with the production. So now we have the label has just one of them represented on all of them.
Fisher, you're forgetting to mention I am now staring at 1, 2.
Okay, I know.
Five.
She always gets mad when
wine.
I like dilly dally, and she's really wanting to just drink some wine.
So I'm just going to go ahead and open it, so you can keep talking and do whatever you want.
Go ahead. I'm here for the sound effect.
Oh, it's coming.
Right. Okay, Carissa's happy now.
You just take a deep breath when that happens, right? It's like,
it's the sound of love.
Right?
It is.
That is for sure.
All right, so we have all this wine staring at us, and we're about to enjoy some, but maybe this is a good time to talk about kind of what those 17 wines are in your portfolio and sort of how you approach making them.
So in the beginning, it was Petite Syrah, and that's what we have in our glass right now. And I have to say,
thank you.
I was at Kivira, and they planted the winery. The Wentz planted the winery in the middle of this old block of Petite Syrah, and there was a bunch left. And we would harvest it every year. We would ferment it separately, and then blend it into the Zinfandel to 12-15. Percent into the Zinfandel, and we'd make it separately. And I just fell in love with it. I thought that it was so diverse. It's dark fruit, and it's not like Syrah where you have that blueberry character. This is more of a blackberry character. And in Dry Creek Valley, that red alluvial soil that we have there, it just really brings out that character in the wine. So I asked Henry and Grady if I could make a barrel and see what we could do with it, and keep it separate and see what they thought. And after a year, they thought, let's go ahead and plant some more. So they planted a few more acres and decided that we're going to make a varietal out of this, a standalone varietal for the winery itself.
And so do you buy all your grapes?
We do. We're contracted. I have two kinds of contracts. A handshake from a real farmer or a 2-page contract.
Oh, yes. Okay. They vary.
It's a relationship.
For sure.
You're going to grow the best grapes so I can make the best wine. We work hand in hand. It's definitely a marriage that we're trying to get to what to achieve this wonderful glass of wine together. It's easy if everything is going smooth, but you know the work really is hard when we have the challenging times. So that's Petit Sirah, and I've been this vineyard, Duff Bevel actually is producing these grapes. They're four driveways down the way from us in Dry Creek, and we've been getting them for 20 years.
Wow. Yeah. That's a long-term relationship.
Yeah. And we love Duff.
He's mm-hmm. a good guy.
Such a good guy.
Great farmer. And he really looks out for Sonoma County.
He does. Mm-hmm.
And his homeland, Dry Creek Valley. And now with the changes in climate that are coming, our Cabernet is getting better in Dry Creek Valley.
Isn't that interesting?
It's getting to be more of a darker fruit. And also, we've just recently been in the Southern Rhone. We do wine cruises, and we just took 100 people with us a few weeks ago. And I really love, it's kind of like going to the mothership.
Yeah.
Which speaking of which, I just spotted the GSM. So maybe you can talk about that.
We'll talk about the GSM here.
We are sampling, so time to move on.
Okay, so the motherland informed your GSM.
Yes, and so Grenache, Syrah, Mourvèdre. we partnered with some wonderful friends of ours that had Zinfandel planted on West Dry Creek, just next to Lambert Bridge, and decided that we could pick our clones and our rootstock. So these are Chateau Beaucastel clones.
Okay, nice, yeah.
And the appropriate rootstock. So this vineyard was planted in 2018, and I'm fascinated with this. We do, without getting too technical, we do a truly a natural fermentation called carbonic maceration, and partial carbonic maceration, especially on the Grenache, sometimes on the Mourvèdre. And the blend varies with me. I think terroir, every year it's different. The vintages should reflect what life is. Life is never the same every year, so vintages shouldn't be the same. We all have different challenges, and we have different challenges in the vineyard. So the blends change. We make everything separately. I would love to co-ferment, but none of these varietals actually are ripe at the same time. It's just nature of the business.
Nope. Such is life, right? Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And so then in January, Jim and I, my number one, and Bridget is involved with this now too. We lay out all the barrels, we taste all the barrels, and we say, okay, those barrels are going to stay with this. These are going to go into the blend, and let them sit there for a few days, revisit, and say, okay, let's start going. Let's do this.
So I have to ask Bridget, because you were teaching in San Francisco. Mm-hmm. You go to pick up your brother's and your exchange student's case of wine. Mm-hmm. You meet Rick.
That they don't even remember buying.
That they don't remember what they didn't buy. They didn't pay for it, at least. So you now have invested in this wine. I mean, what was the experience? Was that a hard ask to get you to come move up to Sonoma County? What's been the experience, and how did that all work?
20 years, I worked all week in the city, and then Friday I would get into
the traffic, north.
Easy traffic. Yeah, go north.
So fun,
lovely.
Do the
hours
whole weekend at the winery, and then come back on.
Jeez. Yeah.
So I used to come back on Monday mornings until I caught myself falling asleep at a stoplight, and I thought, okay, that's not good. So then I started going up Friday night after traffic. Yeah. So I was working. We were both working 7 days a week.
Wow.
But it was pleasant because it was city life, inner city, public school, teaching hard, and then dealing with happy grown-ups, a little buzz. Mostly very
beautiful,
pleasant.
Beautiful environment.
So, yeah, it was great. It was a good balance. Even though it was hard, it was a really nice life balance, I felt. Mm.
And so since you've been sort of doing the front of house role, I mean, have you seen, you know, consumer preferences change? Are a lot of people that are coming in just savvier about wine? Do they have a lot of questions about the amphora?
Yes, definitely. And I've noticed a big change because we do several wines now in Screw Cap. I've noticed a big change in the reception to that. Mm. In the beginning, it was, Screw Cap. Because my own mother started on Gallo Hardy Burgundy.
Yep. Yep.
And so people had their noses in the air a bit. And now I have people call us on the phone and say, just send me the screws. Because on a Wednesday night when I'm really tired, I don't feel like it.
It's too high maintenance to get out that wine opener.
I love that.
So that's something I've noticed a big change in. Of course, fewer younger people coming.
Yeah.
Fewer people. We used to have a lot of people who came every year, but, you know, it's gotten to be kind of expensive to come to Healdsburg. So we've noticed some changes, but... Rick has a pretty strong fan base, and so this is, you know, a nice thing to see people. Oh my! People tell stories about him as if they were best friends.
I love that.
That's a nice thing.
It is a nice thing.
Everything's a relationship. I mean, like you talked about with the farmers, but it's the same with, you know, customers and guests that visit and
people who come on our cruises have made independent friendships.
Yeah.
So now they'll come if they know that this other group is coming. It has almost less to do with us now as it does to do with the
group. Yeah, you've created a community.
Yeah, exactly.
That's amazing. So we're due for another quick break. When we come back, we'll talk more. I'd love to know more about what people can experience at the tasting room. Our conversation with Rick and Bridget Hutchinson of Amphora Winery. So tell us a little bit more about what people can experience when they come to the tasting room. You're open to the public sort of daily for tastings?
Daily.
Okay, so what sort of special things?
4:30.
Okay.
Well, we have our menu changes according to the season. Currently, we are tasting 6, but it ends up being 7 or 8. Rick gets involved.
Special.
You like Cab Franc? Oh, let me show you my baby. But we're very open to people walking in. We like appointments, but we are not, and nor do we understand people who demand them when there's obviously a lot of space available. That is a mystery to me. But anyway, we love to have people just come up and wander in. And these are people who become our good customers because they are surprised by what we do, by the variety, by the amphorae, by the hospitality in general. But yeah, we're open every day except for.
And so you've mentioned the Petit Sirah, you've got the GSM, Cab Franc. You just mentioned. So what else?
You said 17.
You've got some Italian varieties in there.
What's going on with that? Let's do it.
Yeah. Aglianico, Teraldego, Sangiovese, Barbera, Sagrantino. Let's see, Nebbiolo. Did I already mention that? Let's see.
Wow.
Then
Syrah.
We have Syrah. Petit Syrah, Zin, of course, Dry Creek Valley.
Mouvedre.
Malbec. Malbec, the GSM, all the Bordeaux varieties.
Oh, my God.
Okay. Oh, my gosh.
So, Bubbles, which you can't call champagne. But
and we do a sparkling Blanc
Rosé.
De Noir.
Oh.
And we do, of course, who doesn't do rosé? Grenache.
Okay.
The tasting experience, what I'd like people to experience, COVID changed a lot of things, and it used to be, you know, in a lot of tasting room experiences is that you have the bar and you get up to the bar and you taste. But I really like the sit-down experience because you can take your time. Bridget makes these wonderful cheesy crackers as a little palate cleanser. That's just, they're really fun to snack on. And Dot's pretzels. So I just like the experience to be relaxed. And so I think being real is probably the most important thing. We don't have crystal chandeliers, but we, you know, I like to take people in the barrel room and let them experience a barrel if they're interested in it.
Yeah, and see the amphora, right?
Because yeah, they love looking at it, and it's so amazing. They always ask, may I touch this? Can you touch this?
They're indestructible. We have a room. We have a private tasting room, private. We're not good at pulling off anything exclusive. We just can't do it. Oh, can we taste in there? Okay, sure. You know, we used to say that's a wine club room, but we can't hang on to any of these principles. So we have this beautiful dark room, and we use it when it's way too cold outside or when it's way too hot outside. or just if you want to sit in with the vessels themselves. And some of them have taps, so you can taste right out of them.
Oh, that's
so
cool.
You did mention wine club. So yes, we're mostly direct now. I was doing the three-tier system for many years, and it was a wonderful experience. Got to do winemaker dinners all over the country. And it was just wearing me down, and I thought, you know, I want to go back home and do what I want to do and go back to the garage-ish thing. And I actually make wines for our club, and all of those varieties. When we started the club 20 something years ago, you know, if you just make three wines, you get those three wines all the time. So with us, you get a real varietal in every box.
Yeah.
And I think that's I think it's a wonderful benefit to where we are in Sonoma County, because we have all of these microclimates, and most of us can get grapes from everywhere.
Mm. Well, a lot of the things that you're making, people can't really taste anywhere else in Sonoma County, or it's very hard to. So it sounds like a special experience. I just want to give everybody the address, 4791 Dry Creek Road, Building 6 in Healdsburg, open daily, as you said. AmphoraWines.com is where to find out more. AmphoraWines.com. Thank you so much for joining us today on The Good Stuff.
Thank you for having us.
Thanks for having us.
Up here on The Good Stuff, and Carissa, yet another great show. I say that every week, pretty much.
We do, but you're not lying.
I'm not lying. I love that I think it's a very hands-on approach. I mean, certainly I'm sure their tasting room is so welcoming, and that's what people want. Like, you just want to kind of come and hang out and not feel rushed.
And I'll be honest, I kind of wanted to dig a little bit more into the story of, like, you don't meet many women up here as she's picking up a case of wine, and two, clearly they're married and hanging
out.
Yeah,
they missed a few details.
Yeah, because I kind of like that little love story. We might have to have them back on and be like, how did you get from picking up a case of wine to you're in it all the way?
well, and commuting. I mean, commuting from San Francisco for many years, too.
That's
which
a lot.
Not easy to do.
No, that was a surprise.
On Highway 101.
No,
it's getting better, but not that much better. So, all right.
I know. So, we have to have them back.
Okay.
That's the deal.
But in the meantime,
there's going to be a Tuesday before we have them back, so we should probably have our Tuesday night wines, don't you think?
Mm-hmm.
So what are you going to do?
Well, they make so many different wines, and I applaud that, but they weren't able to get into detail on all of them. But they do make a Sangrentino. I think you mentioned it briefly.
Say that three times?
No. And I think that's a big red wine. Like, that's pretty serious. So they actually are on their 2019 right now, and that's what I'm going to have because it's different.
Well, they did bring us a bottle of the 21 Grenache from Dry Creek Valley, so I'm going to save that if you would like to come over. What I think is really cool is there actually is a stamp, and this was on the GSM as well on the label. Actually, it says aged in Tuscan clay, which I think is kind of cool to actually tell that story, the amphora story, on the label.
Well, and to translate what the word amphora means, because I don't know that everybody thinks about amphora amphorae.
And I love this on the back. Think inside the bottle. What's not to love about that?
I love all of it.
Of course you do.
Okay, so once again, we can just mention they're 4791 Dry Creek Road, Building 6. That is a nice little compound of wineries. Papa Pietro Perry, who we've had on. Kokomo, who we've had on.
Yeah, they're neighbors. Good neighborhood.
Great neighborhood, yep. So
definitely go visit, make a reservation.
Taste some wine.
Or just walk in.
Okay, well, from Sonoma County to wherever you are, remember to drink the good stuff.
Cheers to that.